The Heart of Rural America is brought to you by the new auction platform, Bid on Beef. We invite you to buy beef the cowboy way through an honest bidding process where you have the power to pick the ranch, pick the cut, and pick the price. You are in the driver's seat, and we are excited to ship beef directly to your door. Use code WELCOME10 for your first $10 to shop when you register to bid at bidonbeef.com. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey, everybody, it's Amanda Radke back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things to make agriculture and this country stronger. Today, we are headed to California to talk wildfires, water rights, government corruption, and a documentary about a murder mystery that two sisters have uncovered and unpacked for us in a new documentary you do not want to miss. So to kick off the show, I'd like to welcome our guests, and I'm going to let you girls introduce yourselves. So tell me who you are, what you're all about, and then let's get into the nitty-gritty of what we've gathered here today to talk about.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for having us, Amanda. Like you mentioned, we're two sisters. My name's Michaela.
I'm Keely,
who's been on the podcast before.
Yep. Yes. So you girls are busy. You have a long resume of things that you do. So maybe just, I guess, Keely, could you start by talking a little bit about America on One and kind of just what the focus is there with your reporting?
Well, I've been on with you before, Amanda. Good to see you again. I think at the time we talked about some government corruption stories, and at the time we like brushed the surface that you can really, yeah, we could talk forever about the story. We have new things that are happening right now, but basically what my reporting covers is issues in the West, predominantly in California, but all over, just corruption. I named it on One because I do feel like the American West is not one. We have entities that are trying to take it from we the people today. So started reporting on this when I was 18, 19 as a kind of young reporter in my hometown in Northern California. Took the independent route a few years back. Michaela and I make documentary films together. So our films usually kind of center on stories like this, issues about the unwon American West and the people, the men and women like yourself, who are really fighting for it on the grassroots level.
Now, Michaela, talk to me a little bit about, because one of the things that brought us together was your company, Ranch Vision, which has sponsored the podcast in the past. And we're a believer in what you guys are doing. This is an American family-run business that I'm just really excited about. Tell me a little bit about your work with Ranch Vision and, you know, where folks can learn more about it.
Oh, sure. Thanks for that, Amanda. So I have a bit of a different background than Keely. I started my career in corporate America, a finance background, and I always admired the work Keely was doing in the agricultural reporting space and thought it was so amazing that she had such a passion for it. But it wasn't until we started our business that I was able to kind of partner with her on some of these projects, particularly the documentaries, and capture some of that vision for myself. And as part of our work together, our marketing company recently launched Ranch Vision, which is a profit maximization and forecasting tool for ranchers. That is a family business. As you mentioned, it is with my dad, who is a ranch management consultant and large animal veterinarian and has been for 35 plus years. So that product has been just amazing to bring to life. It's been something that I've watched him develop over the course of my childhood into young adulthood in his consulting practice. And just the ability to bring it to the market as a software tool, a modernized software tool that can help ranchers, has kind of been the culmination of my whole background in corporate America, in our marketing, in our documentary, and in the agricultural space. So That's kind of the
yeah, she's very smart. She's the CPA. She's like reins in my crazy ideas, makes them so much better. I feel so lucky to work with her. She's like the secret weapon of everything we do.
I've got a sister much like that. That's like we're the yin to, she's the yin to my yang, and it takes all kinds to make the world run around. So I admire everything you guys are doing. And it's always exciting when someone can get out of that corporate grip and go be independent. I remember when I got fired from Beef Magazine, I had a dear friend and mentor say to me, this is going to be the best thing that ever happened to you because you're kind of unleashed. You can say what you want. You have no big sponsors telling you what to say or how to think or what to write. And I see that reflected in the work that you guys are doing as well, helping independent family farms and ranches, keeping them on the land, and then exposing really the plot that, like you said, unwon. I think about it all the time. I feel like I'm living in a modern day Western where there's the good guys and the bad guys, and we're still fighting over the land. And even if you have it bought, paid for, and you pay the taxes on it and you're building your businesses on it, I don't care if you're in South Dakota or California, the same playbook is being executed in every state in the union, which you stand in the way. You, the landowner that has the most precious resource, that land, is in the way for some big and scary and sinister things that are happening. So let's unpack some of that. Keely, you've been kind of really unpacking some big stories recently. And before we get into the documentary, I just want to maybe touch base on some of those. So probably not most recently, but pretty recent yet. Let's talk about these wildfires in California. What is going on in California? What's the real story?
Yeah, the LA fires last month kind of highlighted what's actually been happening here for a long time. I'm sure you know this too, just the mismanagement across the West. It's really bad in California, where Michaela and I grew up in Mendocino County. There have been devastating fires year after year. It started to become normal to have just summers of smoke and the sun red and people evacuating, not really sure if you were going to be able to stay in your home, if you're going to have to stay back and fight for your home. It was just became a pattern. And it frustrates me a little bit that it took LA experiencing this for anyone to pay attention, but you know, that's kind of how it goes in California. We've been screaming about the mismanagement here for a long time. This is just a back bill of ignoring our forests, eliminating grazing. This is what you get. You have a huge amount of dry fire fuel just waiting to go off. And it doesn't matter that LA is an urban area. They've still got the same issues there. Gavin Newsom, I think this has shown a light on his corruption. Some of the headlines lately have had to do with, you know, Trump taking a look at the water situation in California, which we certainly appreciate. If you drive from San Francisco to LA, you'll just see signs all along the Central Valley, farmers saying this is a man-made drought, this is a politician-made drought, people overfish. They've been suffering for so long. Our water shortage issues are very dire. One story that I think has completely gone under the radar, even with Trump talking about the mismanagement of water in California, even with Gavin Newsom protesting that he actually does a great job with water in California, he is actively greenlighting the removal of two dams in the town where Michaela and I grew up, actually. So that's where the dams are, but they provide water for 600,000 people. So, and this is again, a very, very fire prone area. So he's taking those dams out, truly leaving us without our main water source. These lakes built off of these dam systems are the reason why our towns are still standing, but he doesn't care about that. He's going to spend hundreds of millions of our taxpayer dollars to take them out because of some fish and because of some profit interests at the energy company that owns them or at least licenses them.
Okay, so explain that, the energy tie-in here. I mean, I get the pretend fish scenario, but how are they profiting off of this?
Yeah. So PG&E Pacific Gas and Electric is the state regulated energy company in Northern California. They have the license on these hydroelectric dam projects, but they're also water storage facilities. But in the eyes of the federal government, they're hydroelectric dams, they're energy, you know, they're
producing.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. So they've been offline since 2021. This is a poor area, rural area, a lot of ranchers, agriculture. We're not a rich community. We're that part of California that nobody even knows exists. And, you know, PG&E has decided it's not profitable for them to run these dams anymore. So they'd rather spend our money to take them out. And, you know, if you look pretty closely at Gavin Newsom's donors, PG&E is up there. So it's interesting to see this happen. There's been a lot of corruption at the state government level with the energy companies, and going back to Kamala Harris when she was RAG, going back to Governor Jerry Brown and his best friend running the Public Utilities Commission, having some secret meetings in Eastern Europe with the heads of Southern California Edison. It's a long story of corruption. And again, nobody really cares. This is a one-party state. This is a state under total Democrat rule. And I think when you have too much power centralized anywhere, you start to see corruption like this. So that's what California is experiencing. It's convenient for PG&E to take those dams out at the expense of the taxpayers. And the environmentalist groups are happy to say whatever they need to say about the fish fairy tale to further that message.
Wow. You know, it's always seems to be a theme to me where it's like pick the poorest communities or even like the ranch, the agricultural communities where your money is tied up in cattle and equipment and land. So you don't have the wherewithal to go to the courts or to fight this or to have your life put on hold for years and years and years to let the political system work things out. And so it really does seem to be preying on it's the haves versus the have-nots.
At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus with its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract. BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you.
The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at ck6consulting.com and ck6source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless.
How are these rural communities in California fighting back, or are they, or are they just kind of victims in all of this?
It's pretty much victim versus villain scenario. You know, this is a true David and Goliath story, and the folks that live in these towns really don't have the means to fight back. So we're doing what we can. I'm reporting on it.
But you're one of the only journalists that is reporting on it and bringing to light some of the corruption that she just mentioned, and also trying to organize some of the folks into getting attention, getting local and national media attention to stop this, because it would be devastating. The impacts of removing these dams would affect all the surrounding areas, 600,000 residents. It would affect, you know, wine country in Napa, which if you don't care about rural America, maybe you care about that. And all kinds of agricultural outputs from the area. So it would have wide-reaching impacts, totally. But no one is really paying attention.
And you get that better than anyone, Amanda, in South Dakota. I'm dying to hear what's going on.
Well, as you're just telling the story, it's like it's literally parallel to what's happening in my life in South Dakota, except we're a very red, and I use quotation marks, conservative Republican state. And yet, for a lot of the politicians here, it's Republican in name only. They just put the R next to their name to get elected. And once they get in there, they don't believe in the conservative, patriotic values that everyday citizens like you and I would. It is, again, the haves versus have-nots. Mm-hmm. And these politicians have figured out how to enrich themselves by prioritizing these different projects, like a carbon pipeline project. The donor money comes in. They're using the taxpayer dollars to fuel the whole thing. So literally our money is being used to attack our people. The one thing I guess I've learned with all of this is in South Dakota, especially, it's united the people. It's very bipartisan in nature. And that's because we've really realized it's not red versus blue. It's these elitist politicians that think they're the ruling class. They do not have servant hearts. They're not there for the people. They're there for themselves. It's a perfect example of this is former Governor Kristi Noem looks really good on a horse and on the border. And she says one thing and gets the headlines on Fox News. And yet she was the very one that stabbed the landowners in the back here, that sold off her private property rights in favor for a Green New Deal boondoggle. Mm-hmm. And yet she's on Twitter or X to, you know, this week or this last week talking about how the Green New Deal is a scam when she is financially benefited from the scam that has hurt the people. Now her predecessor, Governor Larry Rodin, is basically the same thing, another zebra with stripes or whatever the metaphor would be. And as we're working on an eminent domain bill, which would protect the citizens, word on the street is he wants that bill killed because he doesn't want to see it on his desk because, well, then he would have to disappoint his sponsors and the money that's coming in to enrich himself. And so I guess my message, the whole reason I even said this soapbox, and I don't want to detract from all the information you girls can share, is like, if my message could be one thing to the listeners of this podcast, is red state, blue state, you get the government you work for, meaning you got to show up, you got to participate, you got to fight for yourselves, because no lobbying group, no association, and no politician, no matter how good they sound on TV, actually is going to fight as hard as you will fight for yourself. And so it's difficult, it's exhausting, it costs a lot of money and time. I don't think we have another choice. I think it's open season on the landowners unless we say enough is enough.
So well said. And I mean, I think just the work you're doing is so impactful and inspirational. I never would have known the things you're sharing about Kristi Noem and the other politicians in your state, because like you said, it's a Republican state. You think it's conservative. You think landowner interests are protected. But then when you hear the real story about what's going on, it's completely consistent across the board, whether you're in blue as can be California, where you'd expect to be treated this way, or not. So I think, yeah, it's a universal message that people really do need to hear. And that's what both of you guys are doing with your reporting, which is so
yeah, important. I mean, people's eyes glaze over a little bit when I talk about California sometimes, because they think, well, you guys voted for that. That is what you get. But I'm so glad you mentioned this, because it's happening everywhere. California did not used to be this one party state. You got to fight for your government. You can't just trust the letter by the name, exactly like you said, no matter how good they look in a cowboy hat or whatever. You got to really look at their actions, not their words.
Right. Well, and I'm learning so much too about how much power a local government can have. So like a rural community in California can fight back by all the neighbors getting together, get on your township boards, get on your county commission boards, start setting those local ordinances, and then make the state take it from you. Like forcibly say, no, this is how we're going to run it here. Go ahead and come for it. And then all of a sudden you start to have a clash. But I didn't realize 2 years ago that there was all these mechanisms in place. Like as an example, I live in a county that the county commissioners are just as bought off. They do not care about the landowner plight. Well, what's smaller than the county? The township. So my individual township of neighbors I've known my entire life, I had no idea where they stood. We got together for a meeting. They said, this is the most well-attended meeting we've had in 30 years, you know? And it's like all the neighbors are in lockstep, but we had no idea until we started communicating with each other and realizing, no, we can set an ordinance. No, we can do a setback. No, we can actually fight for our neighborhoods. And let's make the feds or the state come and fight us then, and not be scared of that. I think, you know, local governments and individual liberties, the only way they're powerful is if you actually start using them. So that would be my advice to California, is forget Newsom and get to work local and see what you can do.
And I think there's something, you know, these rural communities across the country, we have a small voice individually, but when we do start to see each other's interests as aligned. I mean, you and I met, we're in very different states, very different situations. You've helped me get the word out about California. I've written about South Dakota. You've written on my website about South Dakota. I feel like there is a little bit of a burgeoning movement of when these rural communities link together and fight for each other, we can have a very powerful voice, because you have an outsized value to the country. You feed them, you protect them, you build, you know, this is the working muscular class that really provides almost everything that the cities rely on. So they do need to hear from us. And it's easy to get isolated. It's easy to, you know, communication isn't as easy when you live in these remote parts of the country. But when we start to stand together and use our voices, I think America does care, and they want to listen. It's kind of on us to educate them and let them know what's going on.
It really is kind of an underdog story. And that's why I appreciate the work you're doing, because you are telling the stories of people that they never would have their stories heard. And even just having you write about what was going on in South Dakota, at times that fight was very lonely. We do not have the media here at all. And so to have an outside set of eyes validate, like, we see you, we understand the fight, we actually care enough. And I know you're not doing it just for me, you're doing it for so many people. And so I want to make sure people know how they can follow America Unwon, if they subscribe, or what can they do to make sure that they're getting the real stories from, quite frankly, it's the heart of rural America. Where can they subscribe and follow along and support your work?
Everything's at America Unwon, America UNWON. That's my website, AmericaUnwon.com. I start a Substack. You can subscribe there. It's on X, Instagram, TikTok. I just joined TikTok right after the ban, so that's probably a short-lived enterprise for me, typical millennial. But yeah, you can find me there, all those places.
Wonderful. And then is there, like, I see on the website, it says upgrade to paid. So what's offered there if you subscribe and pay for that service?
You know, not a lot. I don't paywall a lot of my work because I just want people to see it. So the folks who subscribe are just the best people. They're just supporting my work. And
you're the world's worst saleswoman.
I get that too. I just, like, I give away more children's books than I ever sell, because I'm like, I want people to have the stories. I don't even care. I might starve to death, but it's fine. But that I would encourage folks to go to America Unwon, support her if you can. I pay for that subscription. The value that she provides, it's hard to even quantify when you're getting the real news. It would be well worth the price of admission. So thanks for all you do on that front. Now let's switch gears a little bit. So the podcast is going to start feeling like a murder mystery or something now, which I'm very excited about.
Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the Deluxe Chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtough.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt, exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKE to save. Or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount.
So, High Country Murder is the documentary, and the description online says, where ranchers share the mountains with cartels in a town known for secrets, two sisters return home to the ranch to try and solve the murder of an elderly rancher. What is going on, and what did you two get yourselves involved in here?
Do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think this kind of dovetails perfectly into what we were just talking about, because this is the story of an 85-year-old rancher who was murdered in cold blood on his own land, and no one reported on this story. And it went almost entirely uncovered and is still an open case almost 4 years after the murder. You know, when we had a chance to make a film, this was a natural choice to choose because it is so perfectly in keeping with all the work that Keely is doing and already reporting on, not to mention the fact that a true crime is always pretty watchable for folks,
especially women. We love true crime for some reason.
I don't know why. It's like I travel alone and it's like, why do I get myself all worked up here? I'm going to die out here. There's so many scary people.
We need to know the threats that are out there.
Yeah, so that's why I tell my husband, I'm hating myself. That's what I tell my husband.
How did you two become aware of this story? Is it something local to you or...
Yeah. So it was a gentleman in our community. His name was Richard Drury. We were familiar with the Drury family. They're an old pioneering family that came to our area in the 1860s. So it's been like over 150 years. And there are multiple members of the family that we knew. It's one of those families where they're just kind of interspersed throughout the community. So one of our good friends ended up marrying a Drury. So we'd always known the family. And when this murder happened, it was really shocking. We all remember the first time we heard about it, just to have an 85-year-old community member who was killed in cold blood on his own ranch was so shocking. And we all expected to have some type of update, obviously, or to find out that the killer had been found. But when years went by and nothing had happened, I think that story was always in the back of our minds as something that would be a great thing to get more national attention on.
Especially because, you know, this area is unique in that, for a variety of reasons, the first assumption when this came out was that he was killed by the cartel. That was our knee-jerk reaction here in the United States and California. There's a lot of reasons why everybody believed that. But because that was our prevailing belief, because no one was paying attention, it felt extra, you know, important to go home and see what's going on in this community. Is this an isolated incident or is this what we think it is?
So in the trailer, or it was like in a preview clip I had seen, I believe it was the sheriff maybe was saying to you girls, like, if it gets weird here, ranchy, I don't know what he said, but it was like, get out of here. Or if I tell you to go, go. So like, tell me the experience of researching this murder, this crime. How did you even begin? What was that experience like? And maybe tell me, you know, what happened, some things along the way.
Well, we, you know, when we had the opportunity to make a film with Palladium Pictures out of DC, it's a film incubator headed up by Michael Pack, who's a longtime documentary filmmaker, former Trump admin official. He wanted to help foster a new generation of right-leaning or at least free-thinking filmmakers, because obviously the documentary space is really, it's an old guard of leftists, essentially, and they have a vision of the world, and that's usually what you see in documentary films. So when we were selected to that incubator, this story felt like an opportunity to you know, spend some time that Michaela and I can't just afford to take out of our lives to look into a case that was close to our heart. We wanted to get answers. And, you know, Mr. Drury was just a wonderful man. He never hurt anyone. He was beloved. He was 85 years old. He was a rancher. He lived on the same ranch that his pioneer great-great-grandparents lived on. He was taking care of his sick wife. He adopted two sons. He was just one of these forgotten Americans who was a wonderful citizen, a good person, and he deserved justice. So again, the assumption, the rumor in town, and you know how small towns are, the rumor was he was hit by a Bulgarian crime boss. He was killed by someone who essentially he shot the wrong dog. There was a dog harassing his cattle, and this dog happened to belong to a crime boss. And that was the rumor because in this part of Northern California, it's infamous for black market cannabis production, and that has led to an enormous cartel foreign crime presence in the area. So when we went out there, we wanted to lay that groundwork. No matter where the mystery took us, we wanted people to understand why the community believed and took it for granted that this was a cartel hit. Where he lived was especially hot. So we asked the sheriff of Mendocino County, Matt Kendall, to show us around one of the worst parts of the county. It's called Covelo. It's part of the Round Valley Reservation. And, you know, Amanda, one of the big headlines to me out of the last election was that the Native American vote went, I think, 64% for Trump. And everybody was shocked by that, unless you pay any attention whatsoever to Native American communities where they are absolutely invaded by these foreign cartels. Their women are trafficked. They've just been totally forgotten and ignored. And that's the story that we saw in Covelo. So that was that speech he gave us where he told us as we're about to head into town, if things get hairy, just take my truck and go. I've got one bulletproof vest in the back of the truck. Go for it. So, you know, he deals with that every day. He's been shot at numerous times in that town. It's a very, very dangerous, you know, truly a Western, exactly like you said, it's like the old West up there. And he told us Gavin Newsom has never returned his phone calls. So he's truly on his own dealing with foreign cartel, you know, criminal presence in these very, very remote mountainous areas of California. That's one thing people have told us watching the film is they did not know California looked like that. It really isn't the California you've heard about. It's very remote, very mountainous. It's a good place for really bad people to hide and do whatever they want.
Without giving spoilers to the documentary, well, did we solve the crime or is it still an unsolved crime?
What do you think? Did we solve the crime? We can't legally say we solved the crime.
Yeah. I mean, I can say because Keely's the one who did all of the journalism behind the realizations we were able to come to. But yeah, I do think we came to a conclusion, at least on who we believe allegedly may be responsible for the crime. And if you don't want a spoiler, it's not who you would think. And there's some surprising revelations along the way and at the end of the film that really make you take a look at kind of what has transpired in this area that used to just be primarily ranchers and farmers. And there is just a different element that has come into that area. And I think the goal of the film was to try and explore how did that happen. It's a specific issue to Northern California, this illegal cannabis cultivation, but it has something to say for the whole country, I think, about when we forget our roots and we forget what's important to our national identity and where kind of what it is to be an American came from. So that revelation, I think, would be exciting for people.
Yeah. And yeah, that's really well said. I mean, I don't want to spoiler it, but it's related to the black market cannabis industry, the conclusion that we came to, at least. It's related to water, believe it or not, which is really prescient for this area. This is the same area where they're taking dams out. We talked to a cowgirl named Jenny who works up there. She told us water is going to be your motive for a lot of murders. She never goes anywhere without a gun. So this is what people are living with and dealing with. And exactly like Michaela said, it's kind of sacrificing these ranchers, folks like yourself and your family who have worked the land, who have provided for America for so long. It's that clash between them and this kind of new Marxist lack of rules, lack of institutions, loss of American identity. What does that look like 50 years later after the hippie movement, which kind of brought some of these changes? But, you know, the cartel issue, just to add on, it isn't isolated to our area. We learned through the course of filming this that there are some 6,000 estimated, I'm sure it's much more than that, but at least 6,000 illegal grow sites operating on American public land where people have grazing leases, ranchers. We went out with a couple of women who are ranchers in our community, went out to their Forest Service grazing lease, and she showed us multiple illegal grow sites that she has to just ride through finding her cows. So this is a very, very dangerous situation that the California government, the American government has allowed to happen. Ranchers have to face every day because of our totally open border and our lack of protection for folks who are, you know, working in these spaces. So
how does the ranching family, did the documentary give them some closure or is the case still open? Could we see the courts giving justice and actually, you know, sending a killer to prison, or where are we at there?
I hope this gave the family some closure. I hope this was able to provide answers to our community. Our big reason for doing this again was our community was afraid. It's hard to get people who are like this, tough ranchers, to admit that they're afraid, and they wouldn't really admit it. And I don't think you can admit it to yourself if you have to go out and work in these places every day. But it was just this cloud over our community that, you know, the cartel had kind of invaded our space. We always thought we could keep to ourselves. We could go about our work. They'd go about theirs. So, you know, the black market cannabis industry, the cartel, this criminal side and the ranching side, we always felt that we could be separate. But this crime kind of shattered that illusion. And so we wanted to find answers for people. So I hope it brought some comfort to the community in that sense. And as far as the case, you know, the police were very wonderful to work with. We had really nothing bad to say about the cops. They gave us a lot of access, a lot of time. They really encouraged us. It's easy to blame the police, but from what we found, it's really the DA, the district attorney in Humboldt County, who doesn't want to take this case. They have everything we have. We gave them everything. You know, people have to watch it, but there's a pretty interesting revelation of some witnesses at the end. So it's in the DA's hands, really, and whether they think they have a prosecutable case or not. But I think Dick Drury deserves justice. He shouldn't be forgotten. Mm-hmm.
And I do think that's a large part about getting the case to be brought would be just public pressure and attention on the fact that this case does need to be resolved and the family deserves answers. Public opinion will be huge in getting the DA to maybe bring the case and get more attention. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how long did this project take for you girls when you started working on it?
Well, we shot it in about, what was it, 5 days?
5 days.
So we did a lot of research before, and then our budget gave us 5 days to go figure it out. It kind of tracks Mikhail and I on like a road trip through this community and talking to people and trying to understand. I mean, the main feedback we get from this film is that it was too short. It felt like a teaser. It's 20 minutes. We know that. We bit off a lot, but we wanted to just at least give people an intro into what's going on and do our best with the time that we had with Real Clear Politics that premiered the film. That was what they gave us. We wanted to do our best with that. But so yeah, we shot it in about 5 days, and it was wild and woolly. We had a team of four. Graham and Ryan at Knack Knack Films were our production crew. They're old friends. We felt like we needed a trusted crew for this one. And yeah, it's God protected us, and it was quite an experience.
Well, this whole time you're visiting about this, I'm like, I got to get some money put together so I can send you guys to South Dakota and make our documentary. The amount of times that we've talked about, like, this needs to be a Netflix, you know, series, because people wouldn't even believe what's going on here unless you told them, like, the ups and downs and the villains that, like, just come out of nowhere and the corruption. It's just, it would make Yellowstone look like tame. So I'm just gonna plant the seed. We'll put it out there in the universe, and maybe God will make that come together. But someday I'll have you on in South Dakota to tell our story. So where can folks watch it? I guess maybe to start, tell me about the big movie premiere you had in DC and what that was like. And now where can folks access this documentary online?
Well, first of all, they can see it at Real Clear Politics on their YouTube channel. I'm sure we'll give you the links that you can post it in the show notes as well. It's also linked on America on One. So if you go there, you'll just get everything. But yeah, the film premiered in DC, which was an interesting crowd for sure. Keeley was able to be on a panel with the other fellows in the program and talk to a DC audience about the issues in rural America, which was just really impactful and cool to hear, because when you do tell folks what's going on, there is interest there. I just think there's a complete lack of awareness. So that was really interesting to show up in cowboy boots to DC on Capitol Hill and talk about some of the things going on and that affect ranching in Northern California. I think it was the first time most of them heard about that for sure.
Wow. Yeah, I'm guessing you show up in cowboy boots and start talking about ranching issues. Did it seem like they cared, or was it like it's so far out of sight, out of mind, whatever, bad things happen every day? Like, what was kind of the feedback you got in DC?
The feedback was really positive, and I think there was a ton of interest and disbelief that this was happening. Like Keely mentioned, a common thing that they said is, I didn't know California looked like this. But there was, I think, interest when they became aware that we're going through these things in Northern California. In anywhere in the country, it's crazy that ranchers have to face some of these issues. But in California, when you're talking about unsolved murders and sheriffs wearing cowboy hats and talking about throwing on bulletproof vests, I think there's a level of disbelief, but definitely interest. I think our film was really well received in the class that we were in, and there was definitely an appetite for more. Frequent feedback is that people feel like it was too short, like Keely said, or that they want to follow along with some of the other stories she's reporting on. So I think it was a positive reception all in.
You know how DC is. They don't really go out of DC. It's like they like to hang out there, make movies about things that happen there. They don't really venture out too much. So
fishbowl.
Bring it to them. Yeah.
Right. Well, I got to tell you guys, this show went way too fast. We have just a minute left in the show, but I just want to congratulate you on all the work you're doing. I just am so grateful that there's people like you in this country that are intelligent, critical thinkers, and are willing to use their voices for good in an age where I see a lot of influencers online and it's very superficial and it's kind of just easy come money. You guys have chosen the hard path, the path of telling the truth, standing for that truth, and really putting your necks out. So I just appreciate all that you do. I'm proud to call you guys really dear friends, even though we haven't met in real life yet. And I just want to thank you guys for coming on the show. And we're going to have to do this again very, very soon.
Absolutely. Of course, we're friends. We're going to come out to South Dakota and film your documentary.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Well, I'll link the documentary, everything in the show notes, so you guys can follow every little bit of the work these two wonderful sisters are doing. I'm Amanda Radke. Until next time, we'll see you on the Dusty Trail.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families. including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.